unlike yesterday we did the Parshas Bahar B'Chukaisai, which again was like the same kvias as Tavshin and Aleph, and as actually most years, Bahar B'Chukaisai is Shabbos Mevarchim Sivan. Unlike the few previous weeks where the Rebbe seemed to be directly, that each Sira seemed to be a direct continuation of the weeks before, here the Rebbe seemed to barely touch on the Indian of Mashiach altogether, although he does reference it, and he does even reference the fact that the things that he mentioned in the previous week, that the previous weeks, that Geula is Geula with the letter Aleph in it. So at the time, the perception was that a number of things had happened in that week between Shabbos Parshas Emor and Shabbos Parshas Bahar B'Chukaisai. During that week, there was a an internal squabbling over the idea of publicizing the Rebbe as Mashiach. And in fact, what happened was that the week before, the Rebbe gave out a kontras. That's when the Rebbe announced that he's giving out the Dvar Malchus. What happened was that in Eretz Yisrael, in the Kfar Chabad magazine, the weekly edited Sicha would be published at the beginning of the magazine under the heading Dvar Malchus. And when the Rebbe gave out the instruction to increase in the study of in Yani Gula Mashiach, so they came up with this idea of putting out the Sicha in a separate booklet called Dvar Malchus, and putting together, adding other sichas from the Rebbe on the topic of Mashiach, and they would put in a few letters of the Rebbe, different things. They became like a whole booklet that they gave out with the title Dvar Malchus. And the Rebbe that week decided that he's giving out to people who worked on the Lakuta Sichas, also decided, felt that they should do something along those lines. So basically what they did was they wrote to the Rebbe, and they got an answer about compiling Sichas from the Rebbe on the topic of Mashiach and putting it out also in such a pamphlet form. So they put together such a compilation on the Lakuta Sichas on the topic of Geula and Mashiach. And in Eretz Yisrael, they decided that they were following what they had been doing already for a few weeks, putting it out under the name Dvar Malchus, that they would use the same format, this large size booklet with the title Dvar Malchus. So after they came out with it, the Rebbe said he wants to give it out. One night after Maira, they were prepared to give the Rebbe like the Lakuta Sichas on the topics of Geula and Mashiach. And they asked the Rebbe which one he wants to give out, in which format. The Rebbe announced, chose the format under the heading Dvar Malchus, which was a very big thing at the time. People were very excited. It was the idea that the Rebbe was actually giving out a booklet called Dvar Malchus, the word of the king. So the Rebbe, that week, after Maariv, the Rebbe gave out that booklet. And also, it's important to know that on the Shabbos of Tazria Metzera, David Nachshon had, when he went up to take a bottle of Mashke from the Rebbe, at the Fabrengen on Shabbos, in Parshas Tazria Metzera, he proclaimed out loud the Chiyad Einenu Mareinu Rabbeinu Melech HaMashiach Leilam Vahed. He made that proclamation, which is very interesting. If you look back in that Sikha, you see that the Rebbe makes a reference to the proclamations that Mashiach is coming, that it should be heard, that was made here, and should be heard throughout the world and in all the worlds. But so at the time that he did it, at the time that he made the proclamation, the people, he wasn't sure what the Rebbe's reaction would be, and the Rebbe, whatever, the Rebbe smiled, the Rebbe was clear that it went through. A few weeks later, when the Rebbe was giving out this kuntres under the heading Dvar Malchus, the Rebbe gave out this booklet. So at the end, the Rebbe giving out the booklet, he was standing in the back, Dovid Nachman was standing in the back with Avitav, and they decided, they started to sing Yechi Adonainu. The Rebbe was already starting to head out. The Rebbe gave out in the front and he started walking to the back. So as the Rebbe was walking to the back, so they stood in the back because they were a little scared how it would go over. So they were sort of like hiding out in the back and singing. And the Ayalam sort of like tentatively joined in. And it's all on video. It's all on video. You can see the video of the Rebbe giving out the Dharma office. And on the video you see that as the Rebbe walked to the back, and the Rebbe's coming to the point where he turns to go out the door, you can see the Rebbe looks up into the crowd, and the Rebbe goes like this. To David Nachshon Avitab. That was the address. And the Rebbe, as he walks out, they're singing, the Rebbe is encouraging to sing, and the Rebbe walks out, he gives like an extra to someone standing off into the crowd, and those who were there saw it was clearly David Nachshon Avitab. They were the guys who had started the singing. The Rebbe goes out. That night, the people were very, it was a lot of excitement. There were plenty of people sitting, and they were dancing for hours afterwards, and then it was very exciting that I've encouraged this thing. And afterwards, we were sitting in Fabranging. I was there as well. And what happened was, there was a fellow named Shmuel Shmueli who used to own a paper called Yisrael Shalanu. And Shmuel Shmueli and Yisrael Shalanu prepared a whole, It was like a New York Times size paper, not like a small paper. Like, and he prepared like a big 2-page spread. Because he was friends with them and he knew what they were going to do, and they were waiting to see the reaction. He also knew that a few weeks before, by the Fabrengen, he had already proclaimed, David Nachs already proclaimed Yechi, and the Rebbe was clearly accepting of it. It was the so. He did a whole 2-page spread, which he brought to the table. We saw it. He showed a whole 2-page spread, which said that the Chassidim were victorious, and the rabbis accepted, probably acknowledged the fact that he's Mashiach. So he said. So he has this 2-page spread in Hebrew. The Chassidim were victorious, and the rabbis. Fine. So he sent it into the Rebbe. That evening he had sent into the Rebbe, they asked him permission to be able to publish it. So that night, it was already the middle of the night, so that night he got, his answer came out. And the answer was that Kenira, it appears, Shetzarech Liyos Hefzik Le'ezazman, that there has to be an interruption for some period of time, Kivan Shekamu Menagdim Chadoshim, because there have risen up new opponents. That was the Rebbe's answer to put this on hold.
Wow.
The Rebbe didn't say no, the Rebbe didn't say it's wrong, the Rebbe said, hold off, because there has risen up new opponents. Now, they didn't know what that meant. But what happened was that so we found out what did that mean. What happened was that a big rabbi in Shliach in Eretz Yisrael had written a letter to the Rebbe complaining that there are Bachram running around Eretz Yisrael publicizing that the Rebbe is Mashiach and how terrible that is and how destructive it is, and how a few years earlier the Rebbe had spoken out against that. And so what happened was, what happened was like this. The next morning, the Rebbe came down to davening very late, almost 11 o'clock. This is the morning after they sang. One of the secretaries told some of the people who were very excited about the whole Yechi and proclaiming the Rebbe as Mashiach, that you see what you did? The reason why the Rebbe came down late is because he's so upset. But that was just his. Then he told another person, he told Rabbi Baralipska, that, oh, now you guys are going to have to back off because so and so wrote a letter to the Rebbe, and that's why you, the Rebbe's. So what happened was, so it was clear when the Rebbe said that there's no opposition, it was the juxtaposition of all that revenge. It was very clear. The Rebbe said there's no opposition. He meant that from within. It wasn't that there were people complaining from within, and that's why the Rebbe said they put it on hold. So what happened was, so they developed two camps, right? You had the one camp that was saying clearly the Rebbe accepted it. Clearly the Rebbe... And the fact that Rebbe said, I have no problem with what you're writing, and just you have to put it on hold. But they also felt that they didn't want to publicize that answer from the Rebbe about putting it on hold, because they're afraid that people, you'll publicize it, they'll put it on hold. There'll be people who will say, yeah, so put it on hold forever. So they didn't want to publicize that answer, but those, I was there that night, I remember when it came out, the answer, everyone, you know, those of us who were there. So what happened was the next Shabbos, the Rebbe toned it down tremendously. The next few Shabbos. Behind with the Kaisei, Bamidbar, and Nasai, the Rebbe really toned it down. So those who were saying, aha, you see, you guys went too far, and the Rebbe's toning it down, said, you see, that's why the Rebbe's toning it down, you guys went too far, the Rebbe's upset. But if you go through each one of these sichas, you'll see how the Rebbe is alluding to what he considers to be the problem. It's very interesting how in each one you'll see how, even though the Rebbe doesn't talk that much about Mashiach, the Rebbe alludes to what the problem is, and that the problem has to be resolved. So in Behar V'Chukaisai, towards the end, one of the things that the Rebbe alludes to, the issue of a lack of Achdus and Avos Yisrael. That's that the Rebbe alludes to the problem of Machlokes and a lack of Achdus and Avos Yisrael, and he connects it with the main point of the Sikha. So let's get to the main point of the Sikha, and we'll understand sort of how it actually does all connect to what the Rebbe was saying in the previous Sikha, even though, again, it's more oblique. The Rebbe was not openly speaking so much about Mashiach, but the Rebbe starts off talking about Rosh Chodesh Sivan, that the significance of Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos Mevarchim Sivan. So the significance of Rosh Chodesh Sivan is that it says in the pasuk Bayem Hazeh Bo Midbar Sinai. On this day they arrived in Midbar Sinai, and the Gemara learns out from Gzeirah Shavah that Bayem Hazeh, this day, is referring to Rosh Chodesh Sivan. And as the Alter Rebbe brings the Shulchan Aruch, that Rosh Chodesh Sivan represents the beginning of the process of Matan Torah. That's when Moshe started being involved with the final preparations of preparing the people of Matan Torah. He explains in Likutei Torah why this day, why we emphasize their arrival in Midbar Sinai on this day, and the fact that they camped there on this day is because, again, this day represents a milestone in the final preparations for Matan Torah. The question is, so the Rebbe says, and that's also connected to the fact that we every year, the Shabbos right before Shavuos, we always read Parshas Bamidbar, which is, starts with the words Bamidbar Sinai. So the Rebbe says, what is the significance of the Midbar in connection to Matan Torah? So we know, Chazal say that a Midbar is called a Makom Hefker. It's a place that's an ownerless place, that there's no ownership. There's no private ownership, and there's no public ownership. It's just an ownerless place, a place without any ownership at all. And Chazal learned from this that because it's a place without any owner, just like it's a place without any owner, which means that anybody could come along and lay claim to a piece of land in the desert, because there's no owners to... When something is ownerless, so someone could establish ownership, there's nothing stopping them. And so you make that association, same thing with the Torah, that the reason why the Torah is given in the Midbar is because whoever wants to come and receive it can come and receive it, because it's available to all. So the question the Rebbe raises is that this doesn't seem to be an accurate depiction of how the Torah is given. The point that the Torah is given is not that it remains ownerless. The Torah is given over to the ownership of every single Jew.
Right.
So normally, in other words, it's not in a way that the Eibishter took off his ownership and left it as something ownerless, and now whoever wants could come and claim ownership. It's the other way. He gave it in a way that it belongs. Everyone belongs to every single Jew, as we say, Nasan Lanu Es Teirasa. He gave it to us. He gave it. Not only that, we say that he gave it to every single Jew, even the smallest child. As we say that it's an inheritance to the community of Yaakov, meaning an inheritance means that even a little child, the moment he's born, inherits the whole thing. So it belongs to everybody. So we have to understand. So what's the connection, the special connection of the Torah to all Jews that's accomplished on Rosh Chodesh Sivan? Because as Chazal say about Rosh Chodesh Sivan, that it says, Vayichan Shem Yisrael Neged Ahar, on that day, they camped as one man with one heart on that day. So it says that the Eibishter said, now the time has come for me to give them my Torah. So on Rosh Chodesh Sivan is the day the Eibishter says, now has come the time to give them my Torah. So on the one hand, Rosh Chodesh Sivan seems to emphasize the connection of every Jew to the Torah, that now is the time to give them my Torah. On the other hand, why do we emphasize the fact that on Rosh Chodesh Sivan they came to the Midbar being a place without any owner, which doesn't seem to comport, doesn't seem to fit with the fact that the whole idea of the giving of the Torah is that now it does become the property of each and every Jew. I'm sorry, what? Okay. So, the other hand, we also have to understand, why do we emphasize the Midbar, Dafka, in the Parsha right before Shavuos? We said that the arrival in the Midbar happens on Rosh Chodesh. So we should do it, and we should say, read Bamidbar and Shabbos Mevarchim, and the Parsha that we're blessing the new month. Since Rosh Chodesh is the day where we emphasize the Indian of Midbar, that they arrived in the Midbar, so if Rosh Chodesh is the day, so we should read Bamidbar and the Parsha Shabbos before. In fact, the whole reason that we give for reading Bamidbar is that Ezra instituted, that the way they instituted the institution of reading the Torah was, they should read the curses in the book of Vayikra before Shavuos, and you should read the curses in the book of the Dvarim before Rosh Hashanah. Why? Where it says that Tich Lashana v'Kil Leisel, Tach Lashana v'Birchesel. We want to get away all of the negatives of the previous year, and if there's any residual negativity, the curses, we want to get that out of the way. We're starting a new year. So for Shavuos, we're starting a new year of Torah. For Rosh Hashanah, we're starting a new year in general. So we want to get the curses of the previous year out of the way and start with the blessings of the new year. So, but we don't want to, but because we don't want the curses to be right before, so we don't do it the Shabbos immediately before Shavuos, the Shabbos immediately before Rosh Hashanah. We put in another parasha in between. So we put in, so in for Shavuos we put Bamidbar in between.
Sometimes Nasei.
And, well, I'm sorry?
Sometimes
Nasei. Sometimes Nasei too. That's a pretty rare configuration. But we set it up that there's one parasha in between, Bamidbar. And we do Nitzavim on Nitzavim Vayelach before Rosh Hashanah, not to go straight from Kisav. So the question is, so, not only that, so really it turns out that Bahar B'chukaisa is really supposed to be the parasha immediately preceding Shavuos, but we don't want to go straight from curses to the Yom, so we put one in between. And in fact, we see a very strong connection between the parashas of Bahar and B'chukaisa with Matan Torah. Bahar is actually called by many of the early much of the early halachic literature is actually called Bahar Sinai. That's actually the name of the parasha in many places called Bahar Sinai. Talks about Har Sinai, the mountain on which the Torah is given, and the parasha B'chukaisai also the idea of the talks about the statutes of the Torah, which allude to the word chukah comes also from the word engraving, which alludes to the luchas, in which the Aseres HaDibros were engraved in them, and which includes all of the Torah that follows from that, and also in the content of the parasha. In the content of the parasha, we say at the beginning of Parashas Behar, we say Mayin Shmita Etzel Har Sinai. Rashi raises the question: what's the connection between Shmita and Har Sinai? So it's here we're coming to teach you that it's not, but every law in the Torah, all the laws and all the details and all the specifics, all were given at Har Sinai. So this is a very major lesson about Matan Torah, that every single detail in the Torah comes from Har Sinai. And also at the end of the parasha, it says Elamitz Hashatziva Hashem Esmeisha Bnei Yisrael by Har Sinai. So we have to understand why this parasha we read, which we read in the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh, we don't mention Midbar. And we mention the Bahar Sinai. We don't mention the Midbar at all. And in the parasha which we read after Rosh Chodesh, but before Shavuos, that's where we mention the Inyan of Midbar. So first we have to understand what's the connection between the place in which the Torah is given and the actual event of Matan Torah. What's the connection? What does it matter what the actual physical place, what kind of place it is, how it was made up? What does it matter? So the Rebbe said, especially the whole point that the Torah is supposed to impact and influence the entire world. So what is the idea of analyzing and trying to find significance in the specific place, whether it's in a midbar, on a mountain, or whatever? So the Rebbe says, you have to say that by choosing a specific place and saying that's place that's worthy for the giving of the Torah, is the point is to actually emphasize the effect and the impact of the Torah on the entire world. There's something special about that place that brings out, more than any other place, the effect and the impact and the influence of Torah on the entire world. So the Rebbe says, what is the connection between Torah and the world? Torah is Torah, the world is the world. What is the connection and the effect that Torah has on the world? So the Rebbe says that actually, in Parshas Behar V'Chukesei, it comes out that you read the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avos. The fifth chapter of Pirkei Avos starts off, Basarav Hamaras Nivra'ilam, the world is created with 10 utterances. So basically, the association between the creation of the world, between Torah and the creation of the world, is that it's brought that the 10 utterances, the Zohar explains, on the verse, by the gifts that were brought by the Nisiyim, the leaders of the various tribes, it says, Asara, Asara, Kaf, B'Shekel, HaKadosh, says that the weight of this gold spoon that they brought was 10 shekel, but the pasuk uses a funny language. It says, Asara, Asara, it says twice, 10, 10. So why 10, 10? So the Zohar says, the reason why it says 10, 10, the word Kaf also means like a scale. It means a spoon, but it also means like a scale. Asara, Asara, Kaf is that the idea that you have the 10 utterances of creation and you have the 10 the 10 commandments. Since the world, the way the Zohar says, since the world was only created for the sake of the Torah, and as long as the Jewish people are involved in the study of Torah, the world can continue to exist, and otherwise not. So it's like the world, it's like on a scale. The world is on a scale. It needs to create the balance to sustain and maintain the existence of the world, which comes through the 10 utterances. You need to have it. Wow. You need to have the 10 commandments and the fulfillment of those 10 commandments, the study of the Torah by the Jewish people. And the Zohar, interestingly, concludes that when this is the case, in other words, when you have the proper balance, he says, Ishtakach be'shlomo. Not only does the world continue to exist, but there is to be found in the world peace, which is similar to the idea that the Rambam brings from Chazal, that Kol HaTorah Nitna L'Aseh Shalom Ba'olam, the entire Torah was given in order to make peace in the world. Okay, he'll get to what this idea that making peace in the world later, but basically the idea is that through, basically what does it mean, the spiritual concept behind this, that everybody explains, the idea is that through the 10 commandments of the Torah, it reveals that the 10 utterances of the Torah are not the way it appears, the way the world is structured, the way the world appears, is that the world seems to exist. We don't see the 10 utterances. We don't see that the world itself has no existence, and its whole existence is that God is speaking it into existence. We don't see that. It's through the Aseres HaDibros that this reality is revealed, that the entire world, its creation is from nothingness, and it's only its entire existence is dependent on the 10 utterances, and if not for those 10 utterances, the world wouldn't exist. If God is not constantly infusing the world with those utterances, the world would not exist. That's not something we normally perceive from our looking at the world. It's only through the study of Torah that we reveal that in the world. So the Rebbe says, more specifically, following the continuation of the Mishnah says, what has it come to teach us that the world was created with 10 utterances? The world could have been created with only one. So the Mishnah says that this makes it possible for the concept of reward and punishment. That through the world being created with 10 utterances, then we can give reward to the righteous who sustain the world. That it was created with 10 utterances, and punish the wicked who bring destruction to the world that was created with 10 utterances. So the obvious question is, what does one thing have to do with the other? It could have been created with one. So what are we going to do? We're going to create it with 10 now. That makes it possible to have a whole system in place of reward and punishment. What does one thing have to do with the other? As if somehow the world is worth more by creating it with 10 utterances. Oh, now if you destroy it, the world is somehow, that makes the world worth more. So if you destroy such a world, a 10 utterance world, now you really deserve to get it over there. Or if you help sustain a 10 utterance world, now you really deserve reward. But if it's only a 1 utterance world, no biggie. What's the idea behind that? So it doesn't really make a lot of sense. So the Rebbe brings one of the explanations, according to Chassidus, is that there are actually two components to creation. There's the one utterance that the creation is actually, there's two parts to creation. There is the actual one utterance creation, and there's an actual 10 utterance creation. What's the one utterance creation? As Brodach said, this, the one utterance creation is that when the world is created with one utterance, the way it works is, or using the model of the Ramban, that the Ramban describes the process of creation, that God created original matter, primal matter. The first utterance creates what's called primal matter, and everything else now is created from that original primal matter. This primal matter is, everything in creation is made up equally of this primal matter. It's not, you can't make a distinction between one creation and the other. So what's the idea? The idea is, spiritually, the idea is that the creation with one utterance expresses the idea of how the world has no existence of its own. It de-emphasizes the individuality of each creation. It's just this one primal matter of which all things are created from. So it emphasizes what it highlights is the creative act, the creator. So what's in that context, all that exists is the creator. Everything else is nothing. It's all the creator.
It makes it more obvious.
Yeah, it's not just more obvious. That's the spiritual reality is such that it's all right. It's all the creator. It's not the creation. Once you have the 10 utterances, which bring out each individual separate creation, each with its own individual qualities, each with its own individual character, each with its own individual properties. Now you already have a world in which the emphasis is on the individuality of each thing, the specifics, the details, the multiplicity, the individuality. So that he explains that the spiritual difference is that one emphasizes God's capacity for creation, and not the existence of the created beings. The other system of the 10 utterances, what brings out, it's more emphasized the individuality, the specificity of each individual creation. So we said that the utterances of creation correspond to the 10 utterances, the 10 commandments at Matan Torah. So we have to say that the same thing exists in Torah, that there's a Maimer Echad in Torah, and there's an Asara, there's a Maimer Echad in Torah and Asara Mamaris in Torah. What does that mean? So it says, actually, Chazal say, we find certain differences between the two Luchas. One of them is that in the first Luchas it says about Shabbos Zocher Asiyam HaShavas. In the second Luchas, it says Shamar Asiyam HaShavas. So even though the second Luchas, not the second Luchas, I'm sorry, the second Torah portion, not the two different Luchas, it's the second Torah portion, the way it records it to the Aseres HaDibros is Moshe Rabbeinu is repeating in the book of Dvarim, he repeats it differently. So how can he repeat it differently? We heard from God himself, the commandments. What do you mean? Here he says it one way, there he says it the other way. Which one did God say? So on this, Chazal say, they cite the pasuk and tell him that says, Achas Dibra Elikim, Shtayim Su Shamati. God spoke one, I heard two. What does it mean, God spoke one, I heard two? That God spoke Zachar V'Shamar as one. Right. And the way the recipients perceived it, they heard it as two separate things. We can't even conceive of what does it mean to say it as one. To us, it's two. I mean, what do you mean he said one and it came out two? We can't even conceive of that. But again, so this he says that what this represents is that Torah itself has both these components. There's the Torah as it expresses there is the Torah as it's purely an expression of God. It's all about God, and God said, and what it expresses is the idea of the divine commandment. Not so much the as God is above creation and so to speak imposes his will on creation. Once you get into the individual mitzvahs, once you break down the Torah into 613 mitzvahs, there are commandments and the individual aspects of Torah, once you get into the details, it emphasizes the opposite. It emphasizes the fact that every little thing in the world has its place and has its role and what you're supposed to do with it, how you're supposed to deal with it. So the Rebbe says that this is the Maima Echad and Asara Mamaris in Torah itself. Just like in creation, we said the Maima Echad emphasizes the creator, not the existence of the creation. What we perceive is the creator's creative power, not the existence of creation. The ten utterances emphasize the existence of the existence of the creation itself, and how through creation there are many individual existences and creations. Same thing in Torah. It is the aspect of Torah that the oneness in Torah, which simply proclaims God, and then there's the multiplicity in Torah, the ten in Torah that emphasizes the individual mitzvahs, the individual concepts and teachings and ideas and mitzvahs, as it relates to many different aspects and situations in the world. So the Rebbe says that through the aspect of Torah, which this is primarily, how do we access the Maima Echad in Torah? The Maima Echad in Torah is accessed through total bittul to the one who's giving the Torah, which Chassidus associates with this idea, with the Gemara that says that the reason why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was Shalei Baruchu B'Torah Tchila. That they didn't say the Torah blessings on Torah study. The Torah blessing is supposed to say before Torah study. So what does that mean? They didn't say the Torah blessing they're supposed to say before Torah study. That's why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So this explains that what is the content of the Torah blessings? Actually, the concept already appears in Maral. What does it mean that, what do we say in the Torah blessing? We thank God for being the Nosei HaTorah, the giver of the Torah. So the idea that they didn't say the blessing on the Torah means what they lost sight, they forgot, they lacked the proper bittul to the giver of the Torah. So the way we reveal the aspect of Torah as it all proclaims one thing and one thing only, it just proclaims God, that's through the bittul to the one who gives the Torah. It's not about the details, it's about the one who gave it. Through the actual study of Torah and the performance of all the individual mitzvahs, that's how we bring out the Asara Mamaras in Torah, and in turn, we do that in the world. Through connecting to the Maimer Echad in Torah, we reveal the aspect of Maimer Echad in the world, the fact that the whole existence, the world has no existence of its own, it's all about the Creator. And through the aspect of the Ten Commandments, we bring out the Asara Mamaras in the world, we reveal how in the world, everything in the world, it exists for a specific purpose and for a specific intention. But each one has an advantage that the other doesn't have. when we talk about the Mayim Echad and Tera and the Aseres HaDibros and Tera, each one has an advantage that the other doesn't have. The advantage of the Mayim Echad and Tera is it's a much greater revelation. It's God as He completely transcends creation. It's God as He completely transcends existence. So there's a much higher revelation. The problem is that it's not internalized properly. The advantage of the Aseres HaDibros is that it reveals the godly aspect as it relates to each individual aspect of existence and each individual action and situation and so on. So, and it's something that you can relate to and internalize and appreciate. So it's a lower revelation, but it can be internalized. So what's the ultimate? What's our ultimate job when we say that our mission is to create a Dirba Tachtainim? The ultimate is to fuse these two things. That the Maimer Echad should be revealed within the Asara Mamoris. That's our job, to fuse these two aspects. The consciousness that nothing else exists except for God. It's all about God, the total vital to the one who's giving the Torah. At the same time, to see and perceive that in every individual aspect of existence, in every individual situation, in every individual topic and idea and situation that the Torah discusses and addresses, to see how that expresses this singular reality, the singular reality of the fact that it's all God. So, the Rebbe says like this, and that's actually how we fulfill the purpose of creation, which is to create, to make a Dirba Tachtein. So then the Rebbe explains how this is especially connected with Sfiras HaEmunah. And he refers to the Maim of the Alter Rebbe, where the Alter Rebbe connects the significance of the Jewish people arriving at the Midbar on Rosh Chodesh Sivan with the fact that it was after 44 days of Sfira, and then it connects with the 44th day, the 45th day of Sfira. Then the Rebbe also associates it with, explains the connection with the Parshas, that Bahar is represents a mountain is something which is large and elevated, which seems to, it's fact it's called, a mountain is referred to in the Kabbalistic literature as the aspect of Tzomeach within domain. It's within the inanimate world, that's something that has like growth. Even though it doesn't actually grow, the mountain doesn't actually grow, but the point is, it stands up, it stands out. So that emphasizes the idea of growth, the idea of individuality, the idea of the world as everything in the world having its existence, its own mitzvahs. Whereas b'chukesai, which is the idea of something that's totally engraved to the point that it's not separate from the person, to the point that the Torah becomes his very being. It's not a separate existence from him. It's all only the existence of the Torah, which just comes through the bittul. To, which is expressed in the word chukah. Chukah means that a commandment without the reason being revealed and specified, that it's total submission, just doing it because that's what God says, that's what has to be done. So it never says, by combining the two, Bahar and Bechukai, together, that represents this idea of our role and our mission to combine these two things, and the Rebbe again explains how it's alluded to in Midbar as well, and in Parshas by Midbar as well, and then the Rebbe goes to explain, so why is the Torah given in a Midbar, in a place that's actually ownerless, as opposed to a public domain? A public domain is a place that everybody owns collectively, that the society owns collectively. It's called the Rosh HaRabim. Torah has such a concept, Rosh HaRabim, something that's,
So
why not give it in Rosh Hashanah? Something which is a collective ownership, which is what ends up being with the Torah. There's a collective ownership of the Torah. So the Rebbe explains, what's the difference between a Rosh Hashanah and a Midbar? So he says, the Rosh Hashanah alludes to the idea of Torah as it relates to all the individuals. Midbar, Hefka, is the aspect of Torah as it transcends any connection with this world, any connection with the specifics and with the individuals who are receiving the Torah. And that's why the Torah is given in the Makom Hefker, to allude that the ultimate, and we say that from this we learn that whoever wants to receive it should come and receive it. The idea is that we're supposed to ultimately receive even the aspect of divine revelation, which totally transcends the world. That's our job, to internalize it and to bring that down into the world. So the Rebbe says, based on this, we understand what the pasuk connects, the day that they arrived in Midbar Sinai, and it continues, Vayichan Sham Yisrael, that they camped as one man with one heart. So Chazal says as follows, the Medr says, it's very important, Hoyel v'sanu Yisrael as hamachloikas. Since they camped as one man with one heart, since they, at this point, they reached a point where they despised machloikas, v'avu es hasholom, and they loved peace, v'nasu chanoya achas, and they became one encampment, harei hashoh she'etin lahem es teiros. That's, so Abraham says, now's the time that I should give them my Torah. What's that connection between giving the Torah in the Midbar with the fact that they hated Machlokes and they rejected and decided to hate Machlokes and embrace and love peace? So he says that the whole point is in order to receive this level of Torah. That's in the Midbar, that's the level of Hefker, that's above individual ownership, it totally transcends the world. How do you become a vessel to that? You have to go out of your Metzias. You have to go out of your individual Metzias, out of your individual existence. Or as the Chazal say, in order to receive the Torah, you have to make yourself Hefker like a Midbar. In order for a person to properly receive the Torah, he has to make himself Hefker, ownerless, meaning he has to go out of his own Metzias, he has to go out of his own individual personality, interests, and his own independent being. He has to reach the ultimate bittul. And this bittul, how is this bittul expressed? How do I see that you're truly not a Metzias? You're truly not a Metzias is when you despise conflict. You can't be in a conflict if you're not a Metzias. Despise conflict, you love peace. If you embrace conflict and reject peace, so obviously you're a Metzias. You can't be in, if you're not a Metzias, you can't be in conflict. So the true measure of when how a person achieved this state of being like a Midbar, of being totally Hefker, well, as we say in Shemin Esav, "Nafshi kafur l'kol tia," my soul should be like dust to everyone. God, please send people to step on me. This is what I need. This is what I want. What am I asking you for? In order that I should be able to open my heart to the Torah, I need you to send people to step on me, treat me like dust. This is important to me. So in order to achieve that level, so the Rebbe says, that is the ultimate readiness to receiving the Torah, is when you completely go out of your Metzias, and therefore cannot tolerate conflict, and love, and embrace peace. So the Rebbe says, so even though the preparation for giving the Torah in the desert is through bittul, through negating your own individual metzias, but yet we say, what's the lesson? Whoever wants to receive it can come and receive it. What do you mean? I'm not a metzias. How am I supposed to come and receive it? The answer is, it's all God. It's not me. My whole job is to get out of the way. So now you're telling me I can come and be Mekabel and come receive it. Who am I to come receive it? That's the point. The point is that this level of Torah, which totally transcends the world, which you can only relate to through totally negating your existence, now you're supposed to bring that down into your existence. As a recipient, as a person, to the point that it should become your existence and you should study it in with comprehension and with understanding, and even to come up with novel interpretations and insights in Torah and so on. So the Rebbe says, very interestingly, the Rebbe adds in footnote 113, he says, what's an example of this? We said that the negating conflict and embracing peace comes from negating your own existence. Now we said it's not enough to just negate your own existence. You have to bring down that level of Torah that's revealed to you through negating your own existence and bring it down into your existence. So you have to become a Metzias again. So how does that relate to this idea of rejecting conflict, machlokes, and embracing peace? So the Rebbe says in the footnote that there's that you can reject machlokes and love peace because of bittul and a total lack of metzius, but that's not the ultimate. The ultimate is that even when you're in the height of metzius, when you're a metzias of kedusha, that you should be a metzias of kedusha, you should accept and receive the Torah, and you should integrate the Torah into every aspect of your existence, and you should be the height of metzias, and to still be in a state of unity and peace. So here, what the Rebbe was expressing here is that the introduction to Matan Torah is the idea of negating your own existence, bringing that down into your very existence, and this is all to express the idea of how through rejecting argument and conflict, machlokes, and loving peace. So the Rebbe says, when the Rebbe goes to the portion of the, he continues on how it is alluded to in the name Bamidbar and the parish Bamidbar. The Rebbe goes on, when the Rebbe says to what's the Hiroa, what's the lesson from everything we learned till now to Sikha. So the Rebbe says to make gatherings on Shabbos, as it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that you're supposed to gather people on Shabbos in the shuls and the Bati Midrashas to learn Torah in public. So the Rebbe says, if that's something that's said about every Shabbos, something that I had spoken about in early years also, the importance of gathering together on Shabbos in general, and especially on the Shabbos before Matan Torah. Okay, so that for the upcoming Shabbos of Paris Bamidbar, people should gather together to study Torah B'Rav. And also, the other Aira is to gather together all the Jewish children that everyone should hear at Aseres HaDibros at Shavuos. Everyone should come to Shul and bring even the smallest children. So the Rebbe says that these two things emphasize the two extremes of total bittul and total metzius, as they're fused together. On the one hand, by everyone gathering together, you seem to be de-emphasizing the individuality of each people, because the person is getting together with all kinds of people that are nowhere near his own individual level. It's not, the unity is not based on the fact, the commonality that we have, the fact that we're on the same level. The unity is including men, women, and then even the smallest children, even newly born babies. So clearly, this is a unity that's coming out of bittul. On the other hand, together with the bittul that's expressed in the unification of many Jews, is also emphasized the force and the power of the metzias of each individual Jew, as each one of them receives the Torah and learns and comprehends the Torah in his own understanding, each according to his own capacities. So the Rebbe says that the Yehiratzen, what's the Yehiratzen from the Sikha? What should be that by Achlota to increase in the Achdus of Jewish people as a preparation for Kabbalah HaTorah, this should hurry and speed up and accomplish immediately the negation of the Golos, whose cause is from the opposite of Avos Yisrael, and by canceling out the cause, it automatically would cancel out the effect. And we should have Tegev Miyad, the Gula Amitis Vashlema, Ayidei Mashiach Tzidkeinu. Then we'll have the Shlema singing of Matan Torah, as he explained at some point earlier in the Sikha. Torah Chadosh Amititetzi is the ultimate expression of this idea that it's all God, and seeing that in all of the details. So there was this Bepashtus, that even before Zmamat Teresenu, we should have the Kisavoy Alaretz and so on. And the Rebbe continues with how we should see the fulfillment of the different prophecies associated with Geula. So the Rebbe says as follows, that the Rebbe says the book of Bamidbar is called the book of counting. So the Rebbe says, so we come to the book of counting, which is the counting of all the Jewish people and each one as an individual, which is also a prophecy, something associated with the future redemption, as it says, V'atem to look to l'echad echad b'nei Yisrael, you're going to be gathered in one by one as individuals, each one individually. and all together become one Metzias, as it says in another prophecy, Kahal Gadol Yeshuvu Eina. We have one prophecy that says you'll be gathered individually. We have another prophecy that says you will come together as one great congregation. So that's these two ideas. The total unification through the bittul of the individual, and yet that's expressed in the individuality of each individual. Then the Rebbe says, till we come to the 10th counting, because Chazal say that the Jewish people were counted 9 times, and they're going to be counted the 10th time after Mashiach comes. So we'll come to the 10th counting, which that will bring along also the 10th song, because as Chazal says that the Jewish people said Shira 9 Shiras, and the 10th will come. Well, they'll say when Mashiach comes. And the 10th red heifer. Okay, we got the 10th counting, the 10th Shira, and this will bring the 10th red heifer, which, as the Rambam says, is going to be made al yidei hamelech hamashiach mehera yigola amen ken yira. But this is going to be made, this 10th parah adumah. Yeah, this is the end of the sikha, as the Rebbe is weaving in all the yehiratzins. So he says that this should be through the Melech HaMashiach, who should be speedily revealed, amen ken yiratzin. The Rebbe says, shetege from miyad mamish. What does that mean? That immediately, royim, we see, she Mashiach nimtza kvar beinenu. The Mashiach is ready to be found amongst us.
It says that.
That we will immediately see that Mashiach is ready to be found amongst us. Yes. And each person points with his finger and he says, Hine zeh hamelech hamashiach. He puts in parentheses, Hine zeh ba, but in parentheses after the word zeh, he says, Hine zeh hamelech hamashiach. Behold, this is the melech hamashiach. Ukvar ba, and he has already come. And then we come to Matan Torah, which is the Torah Chadash, the Torah of Mashiach, will teach the entire nation, and so on. And in a way that that your teacher will know, the last thing in the Sikha is that it should be in a way that the Torah Chadash in the future will be that one person will not have to teach another. And the Rebbe ends off the Sikha, v'layichanef oid meirecha v'hayaynecha rayas as meirech. That your teacher will no longer be hidden from you, and your eyes will see your teacher. Take it from the admonish. That's how the Rebbe ends off the sikha. The sikha that we should see that Mashiach is already revealed. And everyone should point with his finger and says, this is, and the Rebbe puts in parentheses, this is Melech HaMashiach. And, by the way, not just Hine Zebo. Oh, look, he's coming. This is Melech HaMashiach, and he has already come. And the Rebbe ends off the whole thing with, your teacher should no longer be hidden from you, and your eyes should see your teacher. So basically, the underlying themes that the Rebbe is emphasizing here is, A, the negation of machlokes and the embracing of shalom, and at the same time, the Rebbe is also emphasizing that there, we should find ourselves in a situation that Mashiach is already revealed, and everyone can point with his finger and say, oh, that's him, and he already came. So basically, people say that these few weeks, you'll see again how he does it again in Vayikra, and you'll see in each week how he does it, how he puts it in Bamidbar. It's even more interesting how he does it. If you'll see how the Rebbe alludes to the fact, so when people come, there's still people today who will say, oh, yeah. There are people who, even today, you'll meet people who say, oh, yeah, when they sang Yechid, the Rebbe got upset, and he came down to davening later the next morning, and then the next few weeks he barely even mentioned in Mashiach in the Sichas at all. You see how in the Sichas the Rebbe was mamish addressing. More obliquely, he was addressing the problem. The Rebbe said clearly right away up front what the problem is, that there's opposition from within. And the Rebbe clearly says the problem being machlokes. And again, also emphasizing the idea that this the lack of bittul, in other words, the Rebbe is saying that we're calling for the ultimate bittul, but not the ultimate bittul in a way that negates your metzias. The whole point is to take that bittul and bring it down and bring it down into your metzius. Make it in one of the footnotes. The Rebbe says an interesting thing. One of the footnotes. The Rebbe says similar to like we do in davening, because at one point the Rebbe talks about the difference between that Sinai is bigmatria sulam, the same gematria as a ladder, which alludes to tefillah, the idea of Torah and tefillah. That Torah is the godly light coming down, and tefillah is elevating the lower. So one of the things that Rebbe says, like an example in which you go from the general, where you go from this general total bittul to bringing it into the specifics of your actual existence. So the Rebbe says, like the difference between Maida Ani and morning brachas. Maida Ani basically says, I have no existence of my own; it's all you. That's what you're saying, Maida Ani. Without you, I don't exist. It's all you. What happens with brachas? What happens in the morning brachas? In the morning brachas, you're focusing on the fact that you woke up, the fact that you could open your eyes, the fact that you could get out of bed, the fact that you could stand, the fact that you have shoes, the fact that you have clothes, the fact that you all of a sudden you could stand upright, and then that you have the energy to. The idea is to that total, that expression of total submission to the Eivishter. My whole existence is thanks to you. I don't have an existence of my own without you. To bring that consciousness into every specific detail of your existence that you're thanking the Eivishter for. Okay, I got up this morning. I have a soul. You returned my soul to me. I can stand. I can get out of bed. I can. I can walk. I have shoes. Each thing to see how, in the details of your existence, how it's all the Eivishter, and that's the same thing in the Rebbe's vision, so to speak, of the Geula vision of how you're supposed to address the issue of Machlokes and Shalom. The issue of Machlokes is not that the Rebbe is saying that the way to resolve Machlokes is not like the fact that everyone's bottled to the devil, so everyone's bottled to the devil. No one has their own opinion, and therefore there's nothing to fight about, because the devil stepped in and negated the individuality of everyone, and therefore that's going to resolve the machlokes. Because that's a lot of people always walked around in Lubavitch, sort of always feeling like, you know, why doesn't the devil step in and fix the problems, right? We have all these problems, we have all these conflicts, we have all this. Why does the Rebbe just step in and fix the problem? I'm saying that's not the point here. The point here is not, like it says that the Eivishter makes peace in the heavenly realms, that when he reveals the godly light, so Michael, the minister of water, and Gabriel, the minister of fire, they both become bottle, and they're able to get along. But no, the whole point is that everyone should, this total bittul has to be manifested and expressed in every aspect of your own individual, of your own actual metzius. It's not the ultimate in peace as to be able to receive the Torah, and ultimately the Torah Chadasha is not a peace that comes from just negating everybody and therefore they have just no choice but to get along. The idea is that to be a taker from Metzius of Kedusha, but that should be with the awareness and the recognition that of that total bittul, and that's really the emphasis that, you know, that clearly linking the two, that the problem is not this issue or that issue or this opinion, this one is for proclaiming that I was a Mashiach, and that one has a different opinion. The problem is at the source. The problem is the lack of shalom and the lack of bittul, and bittul as that is incorporated into your actual existence.